Blog Talk Radio.
Hope. Everybody needs hope. Some kind of peace of mind that they can call their own. And everybody needs love. Just a little trust. Cause sometimes eating, sleeping, breathing just ain't enough. As long as the truth is on the table, as long as there's kindness down the line, like the little babies in the cradle, we'll be fine.
Time now for Lydia's Literary Lowdown on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Join Lydia at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern every Saturday and get the lowdown on today's popular authors, publishers, and pundits. Lydia's Literary Lowdown, right here on GGM Radio, every Saturday, 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern.
Welcome to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. We are a little bit late today, but that's okay. It is March, and we're kind of roaring along no matter what happens. Technical difficulties do happen on Blog Talk Radio. They are not unheard of, and I'm sure everyone in the audience knows that. But enough of that, because the wait was absolutely worth it for the magnificent Leah London. I have had the privilege to read Magian High. Am I saying that wrong, Leah?
It's Magian High, yeah.
Magian High, yes, of course I'm saying it wrong. But
no, it's quite all right.
That's what happens whenever you learn to read whenever you're three and you just roar through everything. You don't. I'm a book nerd. I don't always know how to pronounce things. The first time I said hors d'oeuvres, I called them whores devours.
Of course.
Yeah, because I had no idea. And Chutzpah, that was the other one. You've also, your most recent release, I absolutely loved. I just finished reading it and reviewing it. Oh, it was just this last week. And that is The Gypsy Pearl, which is absolutely a 5-star read. And
thank you very much.
The creativity involved in that blows me away. It is honestly... Obviously, I've read since I was 3, so I've seen a lot of premises out there, and this is not one that I have seen done before. It is totally unique, and I just want to crawl inside your head and say, good Lord, woman, how did you come up with a totally unique premise?
The Gypsy Pearl was actually one of those ones that was sort of handed to me in a dream. But in my dream, it was actual, like, gypsies from the caravan and the old fortune-telling kind of time period. And so that's what I was thinking in my mind. But I had this whole story that went along with it of this girl who gets a pearl put inside of her, and it strengthens her in different ways. I woke up, told my son about it. He's 13, and I said, what do you think of that? And he goes, that's a good idea for a book, Mom. You should write it. So... at the time, I was running a kind of an interactive fiction writing site where I would write stories and put a chapter up or two, and then folks would give me input on what I should do next, kind of a choose-your-own-ending. I presented to them the entire story idea dream that I'd had and said, you know what, we can take this anywhere you want. We can put it any time, any place, change the protagonist, whatever, as long as we keep the overall story arc the same. What would you like to do with it, and let's write a story together? So they decided to stick it out in space. Okay. So we started writing it, and it started progressing through the whole ideas and stuff. Somebody came up with the idea of cycling this girl through a solar system, which I thought was really neat because it got to explore different worlds, which I love to do. And then, sadly, the participation kind of dropped off because it started taking longer than we thought. I originally thought maybe it would be a novella, and it's obviously going to end up being a trilogy. And so at that point, I kind of had to retake the reins and go, okay, well, now I know what general genre we're in and what we're doing, and I'm going to go with it from there. And I switched out point of view and worked on it from there. But I have to credit the group I was with for the idea of sticking us into space, because that definitely did put the twist on it that I think you're probably talking about.
Well, it's absolutely amazing. And here's the other thing that struck me is the opening of this book, to me, takes me back to when I was 13 and in that typical kind of adolescent, and I'm sure your son's not like this. I was kind of a little witch, okay? And Kaz is not. She's not. But you know what kills me is my nickname was actually Kaz when I was around Kaz's age, when I was a teenager.
Oh, how
so, funny. Of course, I'm predisposed to loving her, okay? But the thing is, do you have any daughters? Because you embodied so perfectly what it is to be bored out of your mind and you want something and you're longing for something, and that's what Kaz does. She's longing for something, anything, anywhere, different from where
anything
she is.
Different.
How did you, is that a memory? Because you embodied her character beautifully.
Oh, thank you. I do have a daughter who does get bored easily. I don't know if I was channeling her so much, but when we first started writing it, I'd given myself the challenge of, I'm going to write this from a third person limited perspective. And the more I wrote into this, the more I thought, I don't like this. I want to get inside her head. I want to know what she's thinking. So when I ended up taking back the reins, that the first thing I did was switch it out to first person. And as I started writing this, I thought, well, okay, before when I read it from third person, she was kind of a derp, and I didn't really like her, and I was a little worried that nobody would like her. But as I got inside of her head, I'm like, why is she doing this? Why is she acting like this? Well, okay, here, this is why. This makes perfect sense. And so maybe people will be a little forgiving as they get to know her and realize, you know what, we've all had maybe a little bit of wanderlust or a little frustration or a little feeling of our wings being clipped. And if we can get inside of her head, maybe we can enjoy her a little bit more.
go, but really you nailed it better than that. I mean, I'm going to throw credit at you because I think you richly deserve it. You did much better than that. We expect, if you think about every day, because I have five boys, three of whom were teenagers and two who are now. Well, that's a subject for another show, okay? Probably Jerry Springer or something. But in any case, what really impressed me was that when you meet Kaz in the book, she is every teenage girl I, as a going on 42 this year, woman expect to meet. You know, she's kind of surly. She's not happy with where she's at. She doesn't want to be where she is. She feels limited. She is a teenager as we know teenagers. But the brilliance of the girl is that
We can all relate to that time period of our lives, yeah.
But the genius is that we're in her head from the beginning. Like, we get how she's feeling, and you can identify with that. And then you do something I think is spectacular throughout the rest of the book, and that is you very deftly, with almost a surgical precision, peel away the layers to reveal a girl who's very compassionate, who really does care about doing the right thing. She's not really a rebel. She just hasn't found what it is she's supposed to do. And as she gets closer to that goal, Cass really becomes a fully fleshed character. And I just have to give you so much credit for that, because that's something that eludes, I think it eludes a lot of authors, to actually give us one picture, one portrait, if you will, and then through very deft brushstrokes make that a fully fleshed, breathing person we feel like we know in real life. Is that, because you've written several books, is that kind of an easy thing for you to achieve? Because I just marvel at your ability. We think it's a magic trick. I mean, to me, I love magic. I love magic, okay? Everybody's heard me say it on this show. But it is a magic trick of supreme skill to show me one thing in the opening chapters of The Gypsy Pearl and then transform it right in front of my eyes. Was that your goal with her when you started out?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of my pet peeves is when you start a story and the character's one way and you end the story and they're still the same way. Stories to me are not about the plot. The plot is the vehicle that changes the character. And I think for a story to have meaning for anybody and to stick with you afterwards, you have to have gone through some kind of a catharsis, some kind of a change that comes through growing up and figuring out something about yourself, something about the world around you. And when she's in that age, you know, Kaz is in that age, that's where they think they're mad about this, they think they're good or bad at this, and then they have to, you know, kids are figuring it out, and they start to realize what their place in the world is and what their strengths and weaknesses are and how those can be used for good. I think most of us want to do something good and want to do something meaningful, but we have to figure out who, where, what, why, how did that come out of us. And I like what you said, that you have to peel away those layers. And kids are peeling away layers on themselves where they decide, am I going to drop this insecurity? Am I going to drop this jealousy? Am I going to drop this impatience or whatever? You know, and some of those we're still working on as adults.
That's true. But, you know, I would say the thing that just delighted me as well. I warned Leah before she came on the show that I was going to gush. And there's a reason for it, because your book is the ultimate embodiment. I think I've loved everything you've read, and I've just discovered that you have more I want to read. So I need to get to that in this interview eventually, but I'm not done gushing about The Gypsy Pearl, because I love the fact that the whole book embodies this. Be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what Kaz wants. You know, the premise is she doesn't want to be on the space station. She wants to explore the surface. She's tired of the same food and having to behave and having to follow the rules every single day. She wants off. She wants out. And she kind of sabotages herself into a place where she's I don't think this is a spoiler. It's in all the pitches, okay? She gets her butt off the space station, and onto the surface where she so dearly wanted to go, and she finds out it's a lot more than she ever bargained for. And this is the other brilliant thing about the Gypsy Pearl, is that you make this into stages, just an absolutely surprising from stage to stage to stage. Is it, and I have to ask you, because I'm so used to, you know, I read indie authors a lot, and I read traditionally published books a lot, and predictability is something I hate. I detest it. I say it every show. And you avoid predictability because we think, oh, this is going to be a standard, oh, you know, this is a bad girl, and she's going to get put on the surface, and then she's going to go through some really tough lessons, like an after-school special or, you know, a morality play. It is not that simple in the Gypsy Pearl. You need to head to I would buy it immediately. I mean, to the audience, I would absolutely buy it immediately. Remember, you're getting a teenager in the beginning, and then what you think is going to happen just doesn't happen. And then it doesn't happen some more, and then do you know what? It doesn't happen some more. And by the end, and this just absolutely, this is how I reviewed it, and that is, you know, by the end, Kaz finds herself in a very interesting situation. A situation in which what looks like every girl's dream could turn into Kaz's complete and utter nightmare.
Yeah, book two is going to be really interesting.
That's my pitch for your book, because when I reached the end, I went, that's what every single girl on earth would want, and it's not a man audience. It's not a man. Leah does not put that crap in there. Thank you very much. There might be. There's a hint here and there. But even that, does. There is a guy. There's a hunk. There's a good-looking guy. And you know what? Not once. Is there really any indication other than, yeah, he's a good-looking guy, but, oh, my God, I have to deal with this.
Right.
I mean, I just can't say enough about it, because I have to know if you – does it just flow that easily, or do you go, you know what, that would be too pat. I'm going to go in this direction. Or does Kaz actually, as a character, kind of become so fully fleshed in your mind, as she is in mine, that she takes you on a journey to where she wants to go next?
It's a little bit of those latter two. Basically, I won't write until I've been hit with an idea that surprises me, if that makes sense. So there might be times when I
That's
don't.
That's all I can say. Thank you.
Where there's a drought, and then it all invariably happens when you're, you know, in a shower or on the treadmill or in traffic or some completely inconvenient place, and I'll suddenly get this like, oh my gosh, what if this happened? And then I have to like stew about it and think about it and think, okay, so then I kind of think through what's going to lead up to that event happening, and then I sit down to write and go, okay, Kaz, how are you going to react to this? You know, and I know ultimately where, like I said, you know, I know what the final arc is. I know what the final climax of book three is going to be. But
so
how exactly we're going to get there, not sure how totally we're going to get there in between. And she might, I know she will surprise me several times between now and then if she pushes things in different directions and deals with different themes and different types of adversaries and adverse situations.
But she's so adult. That's one of the best things, is that you don't see it happening. You keep the pace. I don't want to say blistering fast, because quite honestly, the best books, they don't feel like you're being rushed through it. And yet I could not stop reading the book. I really couldn't. I was like, oh, she's not acting like she's supposed to. She's supposed to be a spoiled brat. She's not supposed to get along with everyone. She's supposed to, you know, everybody has in their mind, and that's why, you know, a lot of guests I have on the show, I can't praise them enough, because there's just nothing predictable there. And by the end, oh, I cannot praise you enough for this. This is a girl who, you know, when you're in a movie theater and somebody is going to go investigate the sound by themselves, and you're going, really, we're going to see this again? Okay, by the end, Kaz has exactly the reaction we all want those morons up on the big screen to have, which is, I'm not going to walk down that hallway tonight or anytime soon until it's daylight and I know if it's safe to go down there or not. I really like the fact that she acts realistically. Because, you know, sometimes people can get so carried away in a fantasy that they get too carried away in a fantasy, if you know what I'm saying. You didn't get carried away in that.
Whether it's the plot that's driving it or the character, and it's, for me, it has to be the character. And I think that comes because for like about 25, 30 years, I wrote scripts for things, you know, nonprofit, whatever, for, you know, camps or schools or churches or whatever. I would write scripts, and so I was always thinking in terms of the characters and how they speak and how they act. And it was very character-driven, not so much plot-driven, and that, I think, has always stuck with me once I started writing novels. It was always about the people and do they feel genuine and authentic, even in a fantasy, even in a completely bizarre situation. Can you still believe that person?
It is, and you make creatures who could be repulsive very sympathetic to the point you're rooting for them, and you also turn everything on its ear, and I really like that because for me, it's almost symbolic in that I like I really hate whenever there's this dichotomy in play where if someone maybe isn't physically the most gorgeous or some creature is not physically the most gorgeous in the world, then obviously they're going to turn into a bad person. You definitely avoid that. And I just found a particular – you know what I'm talking about. And
yeah.
I found your creations that are totally fictional that I don't have to relate to, that I couldn't relate to because they are not me. They are not a human being. I found I think you just did an amazing job in starting off by portraying them as small and yet fearsome, repulsive, just not something you wanted to be around. Something that almost, I hate to use the movie analogy again because I prefer a book any day over a movie, but you know, whenever the creepy movie swells, you're being told something bad is going to happen. And somehow, Leah, it must be the scripts, okay, because somehow that music started playing in my head. Or it could be because Leah London had your first full-length musical was produced when you were only 19. But I hear the music nonetheless. So I hear the music in this character, and I think, oh, that's bad news. That can't be a good thing. Even while she's still on the ship, that can't be a good thing. Mm-hmm. And then you flip that character on its head, and you make me want to go wherever they take me. You make me loyal to those characters. And if that is not enough of a tease to get you to buy the Gypsy Pearl, people listening, it really should be. But, you know, I do want to talk a little bit about you writing musicals because I have to wonder, being profoundly tone-deaf myself, if I can't hear a tune in the book, because it seems like it flows so effortlessly and carries me along where you need for me to go, which is the last page. Do you think that has actually helped you in writing all your books?
You know, I've actually written a blog post once about what a jazz singer knows about storytelling. Jazz singing, I brought that up specifically because of the impromptu and the improvisational singing, where with that kind of music, you need to know exactly where the melody is and where the chord changes are going to go so that you can play with and go what sounds to the audience like you're going all over the place, but you know exactly how it's going to come back together again. And there's certain times when repetition is good, you know, when it pushes you over an edge, and there's times, you know, there's musical skills and things that you can use with that. And so I don't know if I'm consciously saying, gee, I'm going to make this a 12-bar blues, but I do think
it's
about pacing a lot. I feel pacing, and I know that there's times when I want to drive the person to turn the page, and there's times when I say, this is where they need to rest and have a cadence so they can close the book tonight and come back tomorrow. You know,
yeah, that doesn't happen.
Sometimes you need that
I read it in one sitting. That doesn't happen. And I'm going to say it wrong again. Magian High, correct?
Maggie and Hyde. No, that's right, yeah.
Oh, good for Maggie me. Okay,
Hyde.
I said it right the second time. I know, and I want people, I just think you should read everything that she has out because, of course, me being me, I started with Maggie and Hyde, which was amazing,
right.
And you have no idea how bummed I am hint, hint, nudge, nudge, that there isn't going to be more of Maggie and I, because I absolutely love it. And you know what? How did you get into a boy's head? How did you do that? Because Maggie and I, this is not just a boy's head. It's a boy in high school.
Yeah.
It's a boy who doesn't get his way all the time. And the dichotomy in the book is amazing, because this is a fairly good-looking boy, and yet that doesn't mean anything. I mean, I know that may sound very odd, but again, that has to do with the unpredictability. You may be good-looking, but you may not be the best mage user. You may not be the best genius or jock,
right,
or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, he's like a really good magician. Yeah, right, right. Exactly.
I love that.
He happens to be, he's good looking and everything, but he's kind of, you know, not very talented per se. And his big skill is that he likes to bring people together. And sometimes we underestimate talent.
He has an ability for it. And the reason he has that affinity and ability for it is because he doesn't really think of his looks as much of anything. He places a higher value on integrity and morality and doing the right thing.
Right.
Than he does using hair gel to get his hair just the right friggin' shape, right? So
I
thought that was amazing, but I still want to know. You have a 13-year-old, but that's not quite high school. How on earth?
No, it's not him. That's not him.
Body character of this guy.
I have to admit, I like writing in first person, and people don't. I guess there's supposedly some trend out there that's not the popular one to do nowadays, but I'm sorry, I like getting inside my character's head. I like getting inside my character's head. And so I taught high school for several years, and I've tutored high school, and I teach high school age kids in Sunday school, and so I kind of get where they're coming from. And I've always, even when I was a kid, and when I was a teen myself, to relate to the boys with less drama than with the girls. You know, the girls get so moody and drama and competition and all this kind of thing going on. And the boys, once you got past the, okay, let's not flirt with each other, let's just be friends, were so cool to talk to. And so I think I spent enough time with male friends, you know, in the high school years, and then just still observing them now and being able just to kind of relate to them and talk to them, that they're cool. I like them. I like boys, and so it was fun to create a character like Kincaid that I was like, you know, this is a kid I like. If I was his teacher, I would love him. If I was his mom, I'd be proud of him, even if he's not the best at everything.
Throw him into the fire. I mean, that's the beautiful part, is you excel at putting them under enormous pressure, and yet, unlike a good amount of authors, it doesn't actually expose cracks. It exposes more strength than it does flaws. And I think that's exemplary. I'd like to see more of that, because I believe in life, I mean, I worked in healthcare for nearly a decade, and I worked with terminal patients, and I worked in traumatic situations where blood could fly and things could go down very quickly. And I think what I read in Maggie and High and The Gypsy Pearl is whenever you are doing a scene in which things unfold very quickly, both characters, male and female, very different personality-wise. Kincaid is very laid-back and easygoing, and Kez is way more wound up. It shows their strengths, not their weaknesses, whenever they're in a rough spot. I like that they are genuinely moral characters, because I think a popular practice is, well, you have to show the flaws in your characters. Well, the beauty about your characters is they already know their flaws.
Neither of them thinks they're perfect. They both have insecurities. They both feel like there's things that aren't right, just like anybody does, but they work through them, and I think maybe I'm trying to make sure that teens out there realize it's okay to say that you're not perfect. That doesn't mean you're not good, and that doesn't mean you can't affect good in the world around you. So go for it. You know, use your strengths. Play to your strengths. I always try and say that to people. So, and the other stuff will get fixed. It all comes around. But
absolutely.
We can't dwell on the stuff that's bad.
So I'm just going to say no sequel for Maggie and High, huh?
Well, I don't. I really don't know where I would go with that since they graduated.
I know, but it was so good.
Are you imagining you?
Well, I was so happy when I got in touch with you just because I love that book so much that you had more to read. And I finished The Gypsy Pearl in a night. It just didn't take long to go through it. Because it's delightful to discover things that don't go to formula at all, period. And, you know, I was going through it, and there is, and this is just my opinion, and this is probably not Leah's opinion, but there is a certain sameness going on in the YA spectrum out there. It doesn't mean it's not done well. I love The Hunger Games. I thought Beautiful Creatures was amazing. I mean, there are series out, Divergent, not as much for me, but there are themes, and those are good things. They're not bad things at all, but there are the same things, the same traits are found in all of those series, good as they are, excellent as they are. I genuinely think you blow those away with The Gypsy Pearl.
Oh,
I'm not kissing your bum. The reason I think that you do is because there are no familiar landmarks in this. This is a totally fresh premise. It's not on Earth. It's not borrowed from anywhere. And I wonder, is that I know you had the collaborative process going on for a time. Did you find that helped come up with unique ideas, not just in this book, because obviously you came up with a great deal of that yourself, but did you find in collaborative exercises more creativity was the rule or the exception?
I think what happened in the books that I've done that started that way, that I would classify it by saying that the 80% of it was probably coming out of my brain, but the 20% that they came up with was the 20% that made the difference. You know what I mean? Where I was like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine this story without that element. For example, you referenced in The Gypsy Pearl. In my dream, in my little dream about the gypsies that I originally had, the creature that initially comes into contact with her and gives her the pearl, in my brain, that was a fly in, fly out, gone character. Somebody else suggested making him more part of it, and then actually having that be like there was a civilization of that. That suggestion. So it's one suggestion, but it was huge, and it changed the whole spin on that, and it's going to end up becoming exceedingly important to the plot.
Oh, I can't wait. I mean, you have no idea.
Overall.
You have no idea, because the scene where she slides down this kind of it's described as kind of an impossible thing and winds up in a room full of this thriving civilization. I'm telling you,
right.
I got goosebumps and thought, oh, my Lord, I'm at the end of the book. I would like to smack Leah very hard. When's the sequel coming out? Because you don't want it to be over. And at the end of the day, isn't that what you want your readers to feel? You don't want it to be over.
Right, right. Yeah, I feel much more urgency with this particular book. I need to get going on the next part because I know that it's going to be exciting. And yet there's a piece of me that's holding back because I want to wait until I've had just enough of those ahas of, okay, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do. But I think it's going to be really interesting and will continue to allow us to see her develop and struggle with some ideas because, of course, she wanted so much about freedom, you know, wanted to be able to get out and do her own thing, and now because of her experiences, she's going to be called upon to do some leadership, and she's going to have to suddenly see it from the other side.
But
and how when you're a leader,
so good. I mean, I came in the character. I mean, you start out with kind of a snotty teen, which that's what everybody sees on the outside, and that doesn't even last long. Like it's like a pinch when you get a shot that will make you feel all better. Okay, because that's it. I mean, we can all recognize Kaz at the beginning, and as you slowly peel those layers off, and it's not even slow, it's so organically done. I really think The Gypsy Pearl is an absolutely amazing achievement. I cannot wait to see what you do with it next. And speaking of which, I think I'm going to segue awkwardly into a little break right now and see if I can't pump Leah for a few little details on what's going to happen behind the scenes, well, those of you listening to a commercial just have to wait. Okay, everybody, we will be back with the lovely Lea London right after a quick break right here on Lydia's Literary Lowdown.
Hello, everyone. Bea Delosier here with a rundown of GGM Radio's brand new schedule. Boy, have we got some wonderful new programs with great new hosts. A little something for everyone. On Mondays at 11 a.m. Central, it's Messages of Light with Amanda Dowell for an hour of psychic chat and inspirational guests. Mondays at 7 p.m. Central, it's time for Primarily Paranormal with psychic Tina Marie. Share an hour with Tina and Bob Weber of Gulf Coast Paranormal. On the second and fourth Tuesday of every month at 8 p.m. Central, it's the Back to Brilliance Hour with Lynn Hoft and Vivian Hildebrand, an hour devoted to your spiritual growth. Wednesdays start at 11 a.m. Central with Maggie Holbeck and Crystal Clear Coaching, featuring motivational inspiration to get your life back on track. At 1 p.m. Central, join Claudia Cleary on Wednesdays with Namaste Nutrition for an hour of soothing chat all about good health, positivity, and spiritual balance. Thursdays, start your day at 9 a.m. Central with Nancy Murdoch and Mastering the Art of Joyfulness. Let Nancy and her special guests lift you out of that rut and get you back in your groove. At 8 p.m. Central, join Dr. Gregory Scott for the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour. Gregory offers spiritual education to further you along your path to enlightenment and empowerment. Fridays at 12 noon Central, it's Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Join Brenda for an hour of inspiration and motivation, featuring a lineup of today's most popular authors and guests. Friday night at 7 p.m. Central, enjoy an hour of psychic chat with spot-on reader Tasha Harris and the Angels Network. Saturdays begin at noon Central with Bea Delosier, yours truly, and the Metaphysical Edge for psychic chat and interesting guests ranging from UFO research, paranormal experiencers, and all things metaphysical. At 2 p.m. Central on Saturday, it's Audrey Quinn and My Beauty Angel, an hour created just for you with tips and tricks on how to be the best you can be with what God has given you. Sunday is a day of service here on Greater Good Ministries Radio, each week featuring a different interfaith minister bringing joy, upliftment, and unfoldment for body, mind, and spirit. First Sunday of the month is Conversations Beyond the Edge with Dr. Gregory Scott. The second Sunday of the month is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend Barbara B. Delosier. Third Sunday of the month is the Light Givers International Sunday Service and Worldwide Source a Nation Celebration. The fourth Sunday of the month is In His Presence with Evangelist Patricia Benneman. Hope you will join us live for all of our Greater Good Ministries radio programs, but if you can't be with us in person, you can hear any of our programs on demand in archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/ggmradio. And remember, all of our programs now stream live from our home site, www.ggmradio.com. Wishing everyone warmest blessings, always in love, light, and sound. Music provided by Arvel Bird, musician extraordinaire. Visit him at arvelbird.com and get a hold of all of Arvel's wonderful music.
Welcome back to Lydia's Literary Lowdown. I am here gushing all over the lovely Leah London about her most recent release, The Gypsy Pearl. Before we went to break, I was kind of battering her with hints, nudges, winks, winks she couldn't see, as this is a podcast, but oh well, about a follow-up, because we know now The Gypsy Pearl is going to be a trilogy. But first and foremost, Leah, we can find this on Kindle. We can find it in the Amazon store. Where else can we buy this?
It is only on Amazon, but it's in both paperback and Kindle.
Do you sign copies? I'm asking for me.
Do you what?
Do you sign copies?
Absolutely.
Oh, awesome.
Yes.
This is good. I'm asking for me.
Address, and I will happy to
Every
you
listener,
bet.
You're behind me. That's just the way it is. So sad. So sad. But you're behind me. So, the big question for me is, and for all those fans of The Gypsy Pearl, have you started on book two, or is that something maybe you're trying to schedule in there?
So when we had started writing originally and we discovered that this was not going to get done anytime soon, I actually had gone further than the scene that we closed book one with. And so I'd gotten a few scenes further than that down the line, and then I cut it and said, hey, you know what, guys, I'm just going to make it into a trilogy because this is getting ridiculous. So I have got some scenes that are there, and also as I have gotten ideas, I've been making lots of notes. I have kind of an ongoing document where I just insert sometimes dialogue scenes, sometimes descriptions. One of the things that you notice from the first book, since this is her first time being down on the planet, a lot of the stuff that we take as totally normal, like wind or sunshine or dirt,
or gravity
are these really bizarre experiences for her, and she's just trying to absorb, spider webs. I mean, we all get creeped out by a spider web, but for her, it's wow. And so,
or rain. Leah, you just brought up something. I'm so glad that you said something, because this is part of the magic of The Gypsy Pearl. I'm telling you, you need to buy it, because you nail it. You just nail it. I mean, she thinks of all those little things that we as readers, we're just carried along in a story, but Leah thinks of all those fun little details that every writer just kind of dies a little, that Leah thought of this great premise and gets to play with. Like the first time she really gets, Kaz really gets into gravity, and when she tumbles face first into water, she doesn't know how to swim. She's been on a space station. I mean, there are so many rain, the storm. It's just amazing. I'm sorry. I'm not going anywhere with that, other than it was genius of you. All the little tiny details add up, and they're just all there in The Gypsy Pearl. But do go on. I just couldn't help gushing.
It's all right. But it's a fun challenge. And sometimes as I'm out and about and I'm seeing and experiencing things in nature or whatever, recently we had some snowstorms and all that kind of thing, I think, okay, now how would I describe this from Kaz's perspective? Because I have to be able to figure out how can I describe this from her eyes so that everybody reading it goes, oh, yeah, I know exactly what that is. But where we appreciate how foreign it is to her. And so that's, I'm constantly making notes about that, and I know that the second planet that she's going to go to is going to be a lot more forbidding and rocky and cold and barren. And I'm actually going to probably end up doing some research about groups that live up in the Himalayas and other, not so friendly high up places, and talk about what
they're
experiencing.
I'm almost feeling bad for her now.
She'll be great. But I think anybody who goes into completely foreign situations, you mentioned the fact that if she's, her true colors are shining through in a positive way. I think anybody who gets put into a completely new situation has different ways that they can respond. And if they're trying to survive it, hopefully they're going to pull forth their strengths, and that's what happens with her. And that's why, instead of relying on the snippy comebacks and that kind of thing, which is more of a weekend of things, she's realizing, I've got to pull up and figure out how I'm going to do this to get through this.
That's the beautiful part, is you're continuing a theme. Because at the end of the Gypsy Pearl book one, at the end of that, I mean, this is a girl who is not in that movie theater walking down the dark hall. She's actually being set up and put in a position, this is just my little prediction, And mm-hmm. I'm so glad she realizes it. She's being mm-hmm. put in a position where she can't really trust anyone. She doesn't
right.
really trust just anyone. And that is a singularly isolating thing to go through.
Yeah.
You don't know whether to take that
yeah.
hand, or if you take that hand, what are you going to owe? So, you know, my predictions about book two is that kind of awareness that she has
yeah.
is going to save her butt. And I say that because it usually doesn't save their butts, but you've went against all those so-called rules that sometimes trip even experienced authors up. So she already, I love that she already has an awareness, like, look, okay, I know this particular woman is supposed to be for me, but she's already saying things that aren't terribly respectful. This is at the end of book one, and I don't trust her. So
mm-hmm.
I love that because other characters might blindly trust, and I'm not. But do you get were you
yeah.
excited?
Well,
Go on, sorry. You know how
so,
I
trust will definitely be a theme, and there will be characters. One or two characters will come back from book one that seem to have been dropped, but will come back, and there will be, of course, new ones. And she's going to have a hard time. Sometimes she'll know who to trust. Sometimes she won't. There will be times when, where the audience will, along with Kaz, be duped. And one character that I'm bringing in that she is going to find her mother, and who has been gone from her family for a long time. And I think it's going to be a very enigmatic relationship. And I'm actually not 1,000% sure until I start writing her whether she's good or whether she's bad or whether she's, you know, what kind of mix she is.
But thing is, you've already got both in your characters. You have both, and you have to have that for
right.
it to be a real character. You have to have that duality. And somehow...
Oh, absolutely.
You mm-hmm. somehow you manage it without throwing their flaws in such stark relief that you can't stand them. Somehow you make it as any one of us who have our flaws and don't. And the best part is I already know that Kaz is not going to trust her mother. I already know it because she's not stupid. That's why. You know what I mean? Sometimes you go, make the dumbest friggin', really, you're going to trust somebody who just popped up after most of your life you barely even remember? No, Kaz is not that character. She knows, and she's keeping her eyes open. And I love that because so many close them just to get on with it. And then there's that lovely, almost princess-type feel to it. And what I kind of refer to is the fact that every girl's dream is there, and Kaz is for the taking. And the brilliance of what Lee has done in The Gypsy Pearl is, even before the book is done, you start to see that this may be a dream for a lot of little girls, a lot of teenage girls, a lot of women, okay, even
mm-hmm.
on our earth right in the here and now.
Sure.
And yet,
you want the power.
And
yeah.
something comes with it. So, I mean, what you're saying with this is she may be someone kind of special. And the thing about that is she may have – you're throwing responsibility on her that I think women – and she's not going to be a princess. Let me make that clear. I just don't want to give too much away. My listeners know that. I never want to give too much away. But let's talk about what every little girl wants, which is to be a princess. That is not, I repeat, not the case in The Gypsy Pearl. But it's similar, mm-hmm. Kind of, sort of. But here's the thing that
she has the kind of
there's
step,
a price
well,
with getting what you want.
Exactly.
I mean, I think it goes hand in hand with being careful of what you wish for, because she gets that
yeah.
thing a lot of women want, a lot of little girls want, a lot of teenage girls want. She gets it, but what Leah does brilliantly is demonstrates that there's a price that comes with that, and that price is called responsibility, and the weight is
mm-hmm.
awfully hard to carry sometimes.
Sure it is, and especially because she's going to recognize, okay, I might be strong physically, I might have my mental acuity enhanced somewhat, but that doesn't mean that you have a social maturity or a wisdom. There's one thing to memorize, but it's another thing to understand and really grasp what's going on. And she's going to have to figure out that whole theme of freedom and how she wanted freedom, and now if you're going to lead, what does that mean? This new planet she's going to is not going to have the same feeling. It's going to be a lot more like the Wild West lawlessness sort of a feel to it.
one of the comments I know that was going to be written, like, you know, as she's looking at this, like, why would anybody want to live here? And somebody's going to answer, because nobody wants to live here. You know, and so the people who are there are the people who don't want to be around everybody else and who maybe have a lot of issues of their own. And she's going to be seeing, whoa, okay, the world is not like what I thought it was. And even though I met people on my space station and I met people on the first planet, they were one way, this group's another way, that group's another way. And she starts to realize, anybody who wants to try and unify everybody, wow, how do you do that when people are so diverse and their needs are diverse and their situations are, you know, everything is, she's going to really come to grips with, this is a much taller order than anybody pretended it was. So.
And she never even pretended. That's to her credit.
No, she didn't.
She started feeling it at the end. She was like, oh, my dear God. Oh, my heaven. Dear Lord, help me.
Right.
Because this is going to be more than I thought it was going to be. And maybe I don't even want to be in this position. So the last thing, and I think this enhances and enriches her as a character enormously, because she doesn't even necessarily want it. Like, she gets it from the go. She doesn't think to herself, unlimited power. No, she thinks, I need to take into account all these people. If I'm going to try and get them together, I have to know about them. I have to learn about them. And I don't even know if I want to do this, because it's such a monumental task. And she's not entirely certain she's supposed to do it. I would imagine there may be a crisis of faith between the next two books, just because I don't necessarily want to do this. You know what
she's going to have to find her conviction. And why is it that I'm really doing this? Is it because somebody stuck a pearl in my arm, or is it because I feel like I really am supposed to do this? Or, I mean, there's going to have to be a point where she really clicks in as to whether or not she's going to follow through, because it's not going to get easier. Just like with a play structure, you know, act one sets up the whole premise, act two tears it all back down again, and then act three is a happy resolution. Well, it'll, you know, not that it's going to be exactly like that, but they're, you know, book two is going to, if book one was difficult, book two is going to be harder for what she has
to
go through.
It has to be. I mean, isn't it? And you know what? Why I'm so excited for book two in the Gypsy Pearl series, I'm not sure if that's, what are you calling this series? Is it the Gypsy Pearl series, or?
It is the Gypsy Pearl. Yeah, the Gypsy Pearl, the trilogy. And then each, you know, I'll put like one, two, and three,
the
and it'll
planet.
Just be the name of the primary planet that they're on.
Right.
So there's three planets.
Right. The second book traditionally is always going to be the one where, whoa, it's not good. It's not necessarily good. And honestly, the third is not all that great either. I mean,
that's
I don't want any spoilers. I don't want to know. I'm just trusting it's going to turn out all right. I actually can't speak. I did want to mention, though, the Fargenstrappel case as well. That's another book of yours. Tell us a little bit about that one.
The Fargenstrappel case is nothing to do with all of the other books. The other ones are all young adult, kind of either fantasy or science fiction or urban fiction. The Fargenstrappel case is totally me just having fun with kind
fun.
Of a British
and
humor.
The humor is amazing.
Oh, thank you. You haven't seen it yet.
No. Yes, I have. Because, ladies and gentlemen of the audience, I have seen her sense of humor. I've seen it subtly in Maggie and High, the self-deprecation that Kincaid has. I've seen it in Kaz. I've seen it in the secondary characters you have. And more importantly, at LeahLondon1 on Twitter, follow her. I've seen a whole lot of sense of humor there.
Well, thank you. I get a little silly up there. And so the Fargenstrappel case is a mystery novella. It's not very long. It's kind of what you would imagine if Monty Python tried to do Agatha Christie. So the mystery end of it is not as heavy loaded as the comedy end of the thing, but it's very, that book definitely contains a lot of the British banter, wit going back and forth. And it came out very well. That actually was my first and probably most effective of the collaborative fiction efforts that I did. And the reason I did it was because I had purposely left a contract that was bad with a publisher for my first book, The Circle of Law, and I knew I wanted to become an independent author. And so I wanted to have a book that I could learn how to format and do all that stuff with, but I didn't want to do it with my baby, with my debut. So I thought, well, let's put in another fun book out there where I won't cry if it doesn't come out perfectly beautiful the first time I try and make it, which sounds like it was just a test dummy. Well, it ended up being a whole lot better than I thought it would be anyway. But that was where I had a lot of really fun people coming in. I had people from Oxford, England. I had people from the Netherlands. I had people from all over America, other places in Europe, who were contributing great ideas to make it a very comedic, silly thing. And I think that particular project was the one that most people who did it enjoyed the most. The other ones became longer and more involved, and I think they kind of lost steam because it wasn't such a quick put together. But it was a lot of fun.
That's perfect to me because I am a big, big fan of British humor. Big fan. But
you caught me
with the circle of law too. Just the mention of taking some girl taking her place as the governor of death, that's immediately got my attention. Immediately. But you also help coach people as well. I mean, you have thought-provoking blog posts on your site, which I already should have said, but I had to gush all over your books. So check out LeahLondon.net because you do amazing blogs that make you think. As a writer, right? Like, up there now, why not use you or I? I mean, just little things, little grammar lessons or comments about your latest interview. You definitely should check out LeahLondon.net. It's amazing. How on earth do you find time to do all of this?
Well,
you don't? So you don't sleep?
No. One of the reasons why, for a little time, LeahLondon.net was actually, that became a collaborative fiction site, in part because I realized I don't have time to write the stories because I'm writing all these blog posts. Maybe I'll write the stories online with the folks. So that worked for about, 2.5 weeks. So I wrote with, and we actually learned a lot about the process of writing and how sometimes you have to go back and streamline some of those tangents that we got off on, or let's tighten up this character, or let's figure out what the motivations are. So we learned a lot from that too, but it wasn't the same kind of a learning process. Once I took back the reins of the Gypsy Pearl, then I decided to go ahead and go back to just regular blog posts talking about writing on LeahLondon.net. I don't post as often as I used to. There's usually only about 2 per week that go up. But I do once a week,
and people are lucky to get that. Okay, so I'm still in awe of that, given all the different things that you do. Because didn't you just come back from a Taekwondo kind of event to help people?
I did. Yes, that was a lot of fun. Yes, we had a board break-a-thon. People could pledge per board that we break, up to a maximum of 5 boards. And so we had kids, everything from like age 5 up to, I was the oldest person out there, and I'm 45, and just busting up the timber all over the place and having a grand old time. It was a lot of fun, and I think we raised something like $1,600.
Oh, that's amazing. And tell me, are you actually, do you have a headset on? Or are you so hardcore that you're like just both handing the phone?
I'm holding a cell phone in one hand.
Obviously, you don't need the headset because you're just too strong. I promise I will never hear it.
No.
The worst thing is that we're already at the end of time, and I feel like we haven't even hardly talked about thing because you have so many skills. We're absolutely going to have you back on. Thank you so much for coming on today. I'm not joking.
Thank you so
much. We're going to have you back on because you're just absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait for book 2 to come out. So, more hint, hint, nudge, nudge, wink, wink to you, young lady.
I'm working on it.
Excellent. I will be on Twitter helping push you along, but I can't thank you enough. An absolute joy.
Thank you so much. You take care.
You do the same. Okay, everybody, as you know, we're working on a different schedule. It's going to be every 2 weeks, and I am so happy. It'll be March the 22nd when I welcome Lori Colombo Dunham. She is the author of Reflections on the Ring. It's nonfiction memoir, Reflections on the Ring, An Ordinary Woman's Extraordinary Tale of How She Saved her marriage and family. So we're going to welcome her on the 22nd of March. Can't wait to talk to her and see what she has to say. And if you haven't yet, buy the Gypsy Pearl. Follow Leah London. It's LeahLondon1 on Twitter, or check out her site, LeahLondon.net. I will see you all in I will be talking with you all in a couple weeks on March 22nd again. Thank you. Everybody have a great couple weeks, and thank you so much for listening to Lydia's Literary Lowdown right here on WGGM.